Welcome to DivCasts from University of Chicago Divinity School. For more of our podcasts and information about our terms of use, please see our website, divinity.uchicago.edu/podcasts.
Well, then I'm going to introduce today's guest. I'm really thrilled and delighted that Molly Stone could be with us here today. I sang with Molly, seems like a million years ago, but it was only a few months ago, for the university chorus, and she's one of the conductors of the Chicago Children's Choir. If you're in town for Thanksgiving, you can hear them sing at Rockefeller's Interfaith Service. I think it's going to be a great concert. She's also pursuing her doctorate in conducting from Northwestern. Molly sort of specializes in world and I think South African music, and she's asked you all to come up here.
You can I know do it. That sounds crazy, but
no, come up here.
But if you don't mind, come and stand over here. I'm going to be over here, and you'll all sort of face me.
I'm doing it.
And you might not know what your voice part is, but if you do, definitely we probably want high to low. So if you think you might have a soprano-ish voice, come yonder.
Alto,
tenor, and lady tenors are welcome. We love lady tenors. Over here. Dude's over here.
No, none of this, you don't sing.
Oh yeah, no, you all have to come up here. Even if you don't think you sing, you'll want to come over here because I'm going to be talking to these people. So, and even if you stand amidst the beautiful noise. So, the reason I'm doing this, first of all, is because it doesn't make a lot of sense to talk about singing. It makes a lot more sense to sing. Now, I first became interested in South African music because I grew up singing in Chicago Children's Choir. And when I was growing up, I was told all about the mission of the choir, and that it was founded during the civil rights movement to bring together children from different racial and socioeconomic and religious backgrounds through music. And this was done in a really powerful way. The choir was founded in 1956 by the Reverend Christopher Moore at the First Unitarian Church right down the street. And at the time when this choir started, for the first few performances, people have always told us that some audiences, would boo, because they didn't believe in black and white children singing together. Mm. The choir has come a long way since then. Today it serves over 3,500 kids across the city, and it continues to fulfill its mission. When I was in high school, I was lucky enough to go on a number of tours internationally with Chicago Children's Choir. And the tour that changed my life more than anything was in 1996, we went to South Africa. This was pretty soon after the first democratic elections, after the fall of apartheid. And although I had been told my whole life about how powerfully music could be used to bring people together and to create social and political change, I hadn't ever really seen it done firsthand until I went to South Africa. There were a few things that were really powerful about this trip. One was just, it's the most amazing place in the world. And I say that completely, I'm in love with it. I'm absolutely in love with South Africa. When I got there, the first thing that happened that was kind of terrifying was that I had learned a few South African songs. Now, we practiced for this tour for like 10 hours a day for weeks in advance. And we learned a whole 2-hour set of American music, classical music, modern South African music, and music from around the world, and then a few South African folk songs that we would perform at the end of our concerts. And when we had learned this music, we were all a little suspicious because when we learned it from the written page, it didn't sound very interesting. And we had been told that music had been used as this incredible force in helping to overthrow the apartheid regime. And there we were learning this music from the page, and we're like, Shoshaloza, who lays on top? Oh wait, it says I should clap. Okay. And we're like, something is wrong. Now, this was the era before YouTube, so we couldn't just like go home to our computers and look up anything for that matter. So we had to literally just like wait and see. So we get to South Africa, and one of our first concerts is in one of the impoverished townships, Guguletu, outside of Cape Town, where, funny enough, I do a lot of my work today. We went into this giant school, which was an empty room, an empty gymnasium. They had a few chairs, and then the other kids just sat on the floor, and that was it. We got on stage, we did our two-hour performance. We had to wear sequined, sparkly American flag vests for the second half of our concert. Yeah. Anyway, so we did our concert. It was fabulous.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it was time to do our South African songs, and we were all kind of like, okay. And the audience was very cute. They were all looking up at us, and they were like, oh, that was nice. And they clapped. And then our conductor did the most amazing thing. He turned to the audience, and he said, we hear you know these songs, too. We wanted to see if maybe you would sing it for us and show us how it goes. And all of us are looking at each other like, what are you doing? You can't just like randomly ask a bunch of a huge group of people to like spontaneously stand up and burst into four-part harmony. At which point, that's exactly what they did. So they literally like sprang to their feet, and one child, I swear, who was like this big, had this like booming tenor voice, is like, show, and like the whole room burst into song, and they're dancing and moving, and we're on stage in our sparkling vests, like in shock. And we're just standing there completely, like I remember thinking I was probably gonna have a heart attack because my heart was just, it had stopped because I'd never seen anything like this. And the power of all these bodies, somewhat spontaneously, because it is so ingrained in their culture to sing like this in four-part harmony, and it's so a part of everyday life, it was just not a big deal to them to just do that. And before we knew it, the kids had come up to the stage and taken our hands and pulled us off the stage. And all of us were dancing and singing together in the space that was the audience for about an hour. Because the other thing about South African songs is there's no end, really. There's usually an A section and a B section, and you just keep doing them until a natural disaster strikes or food arrives. So that's what we did. And literally, after an hour of dancing, our staff had to pull us physically out of the hall and like drag us onto the bus. And after this incredible experience, I was on the bus, and because I was a teenager, of course, rather than just appreciate the experience, I had to get an attitude about something. So my conductor was like, why are you all weird? And I was like, well, I don't understand why we live in America, where we have all the resources in the world, and we couldn't learn how this song goes. Why did I learn this song in America and come away thinking, that's not very interesting. I don't see what's so important or interesting about this culture. Why should I take the time to learn about it? And it made me really realize that the way we learn about other cultures, that music can be so powerful. And that in this country, we still really don't know how to learn music from other cultures very well. This is one of my things that I do in life. And I do very contradictory things because I tell people anyone can sing, everyone should sing. This is a great way not just to do music, but to learn about the world. And at the same time, I tell everyone, you shouldn't do another culture's music unless you're willing to work really hard and really understand it and get it. So I'm going to contradict myself a little bit today, because I think it's more important that you fall in love with South African music than you get it 100% right for right now. So I need to teach you a song. The song explains the other half of my story, which is that I saw in 1996 how people who had used music to deal with every aspect of oppression, from mobilizing people and giving them strength when they felt dehumanized, to come together to take action, to spreading information, to actively protesting the government, to providing comfort and support to those who were suffering, to creating fundraisers that enabled people to raise the money necessary to help different groups that were struggling in different ways, or to even go outside of the country and raise awareness of what was going on. I saw that this music, which had been used as a way of fighting the system, was now being used to bring people together in a way that was so incredible. For the first time, blacks and whites were singing together, and whites were singing in black languages, and it was this amazing creation of unity. And I couldn't believe that music could be used in those two completely different ways, both to oppose and to unite in such a powerful way. So anyway, I fell in love with the music. I want to teach you one song that is very repetitive, except, like many South African religious songs that were adapted to become anti-apartheid songs, they couldn't really be very blatant in what they were saying. So the words stay the same, but the movements tell a whole different story. And today, people in South Africa are adapting these same songs to deal with the struggle against HIV and AIDS in absolutely mind-blowing ways, which I'll tell you about once we get through the song. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, there's a lot of dance movements. Just fumble through it with me and get what you can out of it. None of this is choreographed. These are traditional movements that all have meaning. I am the worst dancer. I got kicked out of ballet at age 6 because I was told I had the grace of the fleet. They were right. But this is not thought of in the same way as like dance. Because to them, singing and dancing is the same thing. It's the same verb. And when you, you know, with my South African friends, I'll ask them sometimes, can you just sing it once without the movement? And they'll be like, oh yes, okay. And I'm like, no, without the movement. They're like, okay. And I'm like, no. And they're like, I don't know what you mean. And then he's like, when I sing, this is what my body does. I'm like, yeah. So anyway, when you sing, your body will just follow mine. Do what you can. So the words to the song, this is a Xhosa song. There are 11 official languages in South Africa. Xhosa is my favorite. It has clicks and I love it. Xhosa is most closely related to Zulu. So many of you have probably heard of Zulu at some point in your life. It's like the most beautiful language. This song just has two words. Shumayela.
Shumayela.
It's not about your shoe. Shumayela is to preach. And Evangeli.
Evangeli.
The gospel. So preach the gospel is all you're saying over and over. And you'll say it slightly differently from each other depending on your voice part, because South Africans love cutting off the last syllable of a word and adding it to the next word in different interesting ways every time they sing it. So the song, so who here is a self-designated soprano and likes to sing high? Yay, and in South Africa, everyone sings, so you're all good. Altoids are over here, persuasion. Tenorish folk. Or bosses. The song is very straightforward.
I'll try.
I'm just using my phone. Oh, come on. My thing is very difficult. It doesn't. Oh, this is great. The piano on my phone, my app doesn't work, but the one that does it in the voice of a cat works.
Shuma.
Evangel, Shumayel Evangeli, Shumayel Evangel, Shumayel Evangeli, Shumayel Evangel,
yeah.
Across from that.
Yeah.
Crossroad Beck. You were born to death. A Crossroad Beck. Luckily, you're in the pews and no one can see your name. So now you know how to, like, yay, preach the gospel. That's your first move. But then the next move, which is really easy, is that you're going to go, oh, I guess I'll do it. Since we're sort of in a circle, I won't mirror you. I'll actually go the direction you're going to go. So go to the right, and you're going to go. You just do this sort of very basic movement. Now, this is kind of subtle, but what could this kind of look like? Anyone know?
Shoveling.
Yes. Why would anyone ever be shoveling in South Africa?
Forced labor.
Forced labor. And what, in fact, would they usually be digging for? Anyone know?
Diamonds.
Diamonds and gold. Yes. So in the 1860s, well, the Hudson was in grapes. I was like, oh, I like grapes. No. Okay, so, so they would be digging for gold and diamonds, and I'm going to tell you a little bit of history. Way back in the day, the British decided, oh, wow, we found gold and diamonds. We need someone to actually dig for them. Let's create something called a hut tax and impose it on the people living in the rural areas, on the homesteads where they've lived for generations with their ancestors, and tell them, you have to pay this huge amount of money to keep living in the place that you already live in. And they said, we don't have that kind of money. And they said, oh, we have such a deal for you. If you come and work in the mines for 11 months out of the year, we'll pay you exactly the amount of money you need to pay back to us so that you can keep your house. So this, of course, led to the destruction of the traditional family. It led to a whole system of migrant labor. So this is sort of the start of colonization and oppression. And it's very subtle. It's like, oh, we're just dancing. So this, you have the start of the migrant labor system. But you'll do this for a while. It's fun, OK? Then, during the B section of this one, you start doing traditional movements. And you show the traditional movements that are being threatened by the this, okay? So this is the first move you get to do. And when we do this in song, you're just going to follow what I do. It's awesome how this works. This is the first thing you do. My friend always says, we are the toza, we grind on the rock. And this is this motion, this very traditional motion of grinding. And then you get to go, and bring your hands down and do this. And this is a movement of traditional healing, a sangoma, or witch doctor. This dance usually implies this. If you do it like this, it means you relate. So if you do this in South Africa, people will go, ah! It might get scary. Okay, so you do this for a while. Then you go back to this a second time. But this time, on the B section, instead of our healing traditional movements, things change. You're grinding on the rock, and then you get this very militaristic movement that happens, and you go, stomp, and then you turn, stomp, and then you're going to go, okay? And this, yes, this is very kind of like, yeah. So you're going to go, what you do is, once you get up here, and you'll watch me, you do a stomp, and then you turn, stomp, and then you do back. Then you take each other's hands, and you just very innocently will be step-touching, kicking kind of thing. I know, it's so hard. And guess what, in South Africa, it's not choreographed. It doesn't happen instantly. It like takes a little bit of time to get everybody's hands. So you do this, and then guess what you do on the B section? You do fancy people holding hands. Yes! This is, we are united in the struggle. And then it goes to this. And you are carrying an AK-47. But, you know, it's kind of subtle. If the whites came in the room, you're like, so, and here's the great subtle part, is then you're doing this for a while, and on the B section, it doesn't work so well on carpet, but you fire. As you're saying. Preach the gospel of the freedom struggle. So you add this into it. And what's so amazing is that you would have these moments where black choirs would perform this music and see how far they could push. And they would be looking at their white audience doing this. And the white audience, they would kind of get it. Not really. And they'd be like, oh, look at the black men singing their songs. And really, all of this, too, is very connected to what later became a very powerful movement called the Toi Toi, which was this militaristic kind of march dance where people would mimic the sound of firing guns with their voices and their bodies, because, of course, they didn't have guns. But to this day, white South African police who were in charge during apartheid will tell you the scariest thing in the world is to look out onto a huge group of South Africans who suddenly start to toy and make these sounds all together with their voices and their bodies and showing just how united they are, even though they have no weapons. It's so, I mean, if you watch video of the white South African police talking about it, like, you can just see the chills in them from seeing this kind of movement. So then you do that, then you end the song, and you just kind of like smile as you come to rest at the end. So we're gonna do all of this, just follow me, laugh when you don't get something. The cool thing is because everything repeats, you always get a second chance, which is really nice. So the thing that will get hardest, and when you see when my eyes get big, it's usually something's gonna come up now that's hard. So this is usually the one that's kind of hardest, is when you get to here and you go, and then you just, but again, just follow me and we'll all be good, okay? We're gonna do the whole song now. This is so awesome. I'm going to check my pad for an appropriate picture. God, this is so
hard. Could you open it up a little bit?
Oh. Yeah. But just start in the middle there.
Yeah.
You can't dance and take video.
Gets in, we'll go a whole time through before we start.
So,
yeah.
I'll just leave this open.
Shoo, it's a shoo, my yellow. Shoo, my
Shumaya, 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 Shumaya,
sense. This shows how these songs get adapted over time. People in South Africa, when they sing these songs, and again, it's not like choirs sing these songs. Everybody sings these songs. They grow up singing them. Even teenagers who are like, oh, I have to sing the songs again. They all know these songs. And they continue to adapt them to fight any battle in their lives. And of course, the fact that they've used these songs in such things as, you know, the anti-apartheid struggle and were successful gives them a great sense of hope when they adapt the same songs to use in struggles today. One thing that I sort of came to deal with at one point was after apartheid ended, everyone was like, well, everything's perfect now. What are we going to sing about? Right. Things are still a mess, but they're getting better. But HIV became such a horrible problem in South Africa. And at the time I started researching this, in many areas, 1 in 3 people were infected. And the government was not providing access to treatment to the people. And what was so amazing was that people used these same songs, again, in the same ways. They used the songs to spread information. They would adapt them in the same way to praise their leaders. And this stems all the way back from traditional Zulu and Xhosa and Sotho praise poetry. This is a way of maintaining a sense of pride in their cultural identity by singing these songs amidst the dehumanization and oppression and colonization that they've all experienced. And by singing these songs, they are asserting that who they are is still important and valid and powerful. And so they praise their leaders, they denounce their enemies, they spread information. Now, during apartheid, it could have been like, meet here for this protest, or let's burn the passbooks. Now, the songs are about how to take your antiretrovirals effectively so that you prevent the transmission to your newborn when breastfeeding. They're about, you know, drug companies, they're about every detail of like how to stay healthy. There's songs adapted for little kids about what foods they should eat that will complement the dosage that they're on of various antiretroviral medications. There's songs about preventing the spread of the virus. There's songs about rape, about rumors, about, really everything under the sun. Some of my favorite songs that I've heard, I've been listening to and I'm like, oh my God, I want to learn that song. It's so, oh my God, the lyrics, wait, what? And like, it's like brutal honesty about things like rape in the community. And condom, oh, I know so many songs about condoms, I can't even tell you. So many Zulu songs about condom songs, and they're brilliant. Songs that had originally been, let us use the Bible, let us use Jesus to fight the struggle against the devil, became let us use an AK-47, or even just a song to fight the anti-apartheid struggle. And today, it's let us use a condom to stop the spread of HIV. And these songs have this history of power behind them. Now, in addition to spreading information, people protest the government. They take these same songs, which were sung by the people who are in office now. Mm-hmm. And so the meaning is really powerful. When Thabo Mbeki heard the song Senzeni Na, sung by the Treatment Action Campaign while they were protesting on the steps of Parliament, he remembered that that song was his father's song, his anti-apartheid struggle song, and now the people were singing it back at him. What have we done to deserve this treatment? And it was just, it has an even more powerful use than ever before. People protest the drug companies. There are so many songs about the drug companies. It took me a really long time to figure out that BMS was Bristol-Myers Squibb and not some weird Xhosa verb that I'd never heard of. I can't tell you how weird it is trying to translate some of these songs. I know so many drug names in Zulu. So also, this is my favorite. They sing songs to comfort people who are suffering, but not just in any old way. Not like, let's come together and sing, AIDS is bad, let's not get it. It's not like that. There's an all HIV positive choir that is based at a hospital in Durban. When someone comes in to get tested, the choir is there. If they get a positive diagnosis, the choir comes in and sings to the patient and sings songs about how we have fought past struggles, we will survive this struggle. And then after singing to the patient, they offer the singer a spot in the choir. Then they go home with the patient to their family and they sing to their family when the patient tells their family about their status and helps the family to deal with all of this. And of course, they're singing songs that are from the grandma's era, from the uncle's era, from everyone's era, so it's ways that they can use this together. It's so incredibly powerful. And then in the prisons, one thing that's really amazing, in the Durban Westville prison, they have 1 million prison choirs. And they allow the prison choirs to sing songs that educate youth about HIV, and they bring those choirs to the communities where they've committed crimes so that the prisoners have a way of contributing positively to the community by educating the youth before being released so that they have some sort of connection already to doing good. There are so many ways in which this music is continuously being used to help people with their current struggles. And I mean, it's something I've fallen in love with. Being a music teacher now, it just validates everything I know in my heart about music. But I wanted to have the chance to share this with you because I feel so passionately about it. And people don't really know about this. Even in South Africa, a lot of people are still very isolated from these types of songs because there's still a lot of stigma. And so it is a movement that has created itself over the past 10 years, but it is endlessly inspiring. And I hope you get just a sense of what it feels like, how powerful it feels to sing a song like this in a group. Does anyone have any questions? Ah, I've answered everything.
How frequently do you go back to South Africa?
Oh, as often as I can. I go. I used to go every summer. I went to study abroad at University of Cape Town, and then I used to try to get a grant every 3 years to go. And then I just gave up on having to deal with outside people and just went on my own. So I've been going pretty much every summer now for the past few years, doing more research. Yeah, I wish I could go longer, and I wish I could not go in our summer because it's their winter. So I come back from Africa a really pasty way. But I try to go back as much as I can. I have really wonderful relationships with choir directors there, and they're all struggling to do this every day in new ways that are really powerful.
How else have you adapted not only the songs themselves, but also some of the methodology to your work here in the States?
Oh, yeah. You mostly, I have used this to, one thing that's painful for me is I learn all these amazing songs about HIV, and it's very hard to share them with choirs here because there's not many programs where they're like, oh, we're doing a whole concert of Mozart. Would you like to add a Zulu song about condoms to that program? I mean, you know, so it doesn't exactly fit very well with like most concert programs I end up doing. But I do often, and I have to be careful with what I teach to kids, but for instance, one of my favorite songs is about rape. And the A section of the song is about why you shouldn't spread rumors and why rumors will kill. And then the second part talks about the rumors themselves. And I realized that I couldn't really teach something in depth about rape to little kids. But I taught the A section, and we talked about rumors. And actually, I had this day recently where I taught my singers at CCC a song about HIV. And I realized that this generation in America doesn't hear about it as much anymore. It's really not something that this generation knows about. So I wasn't expecting this, and I literally got hands, and they were like, what's HIV? And I was like, oh dear God, this is not what I was thinking I was going to be doing. And I took an entire choir rehearsal to answer questions about this. And what was so amazing is it keeps connecting back to the mission of the choir.
Right.
It's about understanding that people you think are different from you are really not. And understanding that you are a community with everybody, and that you have to defend everybody and help everybody. And just because someone is sick or somebody has this, they learned what stigma is, which is great. But it was really cute because they were so eager to apply it to their own lives. I have stigma sometimes, Miss Stone. you have, okay, explain. Well, I can't do certain things very well because I can't walk very well because I have a handicap, and so I know what that's like, and so I want to help people with HIV, and I'm like, good, Ezra, that's great. But it's funny because one thing that's amazing to me is that this generation, when I teach, seems to want to find commonality with everything they learn about. I remember my generation being like, whoa, that's not me. And for some reason, this generation seems a lot more eager to relate to others. So, for me, it's like every time I teach this stuff, I learn something new about it. What's been really amazing, too, is when I tell my South African friends about it, they have no concept of why this is interesting to Americans. They're like, why do you find this interesting? And I'm like, because in America, people don't just burst into four-part harmony. When we protest the government, we don't really sing very much. When we, try to comfort people in our lives, we don't sing. And certainly we go to the doctor, that requires. Especially not singing to us when we get a bad diagnosis, which would be really cool. But it's complicated. So I try really hard to integrate this stuff into
There's a question over here.
Life, but it's hard.
Comment.
Yes.
We are all victims of our own associations by history. And I kind of leaped from one continent to another,
yes,
having a long, strong history of martial arts. And I said, my God, this woman is a South African ninja. The way she blends mind, body, and spirit and song, that's so awesome, and I applaud her for it.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Like, just remember what this feels like, and to sing together, to move together, mm-hmm, and to seek out ways that you can allow music to be a tool for social and political change, even if you don't think of yourself as a singer and a dancer, because it really is the most amazing, powerful thing. And if you have any other questions, you can always email me, and I'm in the neighborhood, so, or you can just find me at the walking down the street. Start singing at me, and I'll... But thank you so much for letting me
thank
do that.
You.
We thank you for listening to or viewing our podcast. For more information and for other podcasts, please see our website, divinity.uchicago.edu/podcasts. Copyright, the University of Chicago Divinity School.